In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
I always get amazed when people don't know stuff like that. Today, my boss didn't know what Rickrolling was. And I didn't explain it to her. I just sent her to a website explaining it.
Oh.
Hello, for those of you just joining us, I just introduced William to Maru the cat. Because William had never experienced Maru the cat. Now he has. And after claiming he couldn't understand what the point was, he laughed a lot.
Well, not that much.
You laughed a fair bit.
Not as much as I laugh at some of the things you've shown me.
That is true, with the swearing and stuff like that. Anyway, hello. Every time I say that, I feel like I'm ripping off My Junk Kitchen. I don't mean to do that. We're sorry, Hannah. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that is, in fact, hyper-allergenic.
Hyper-allergenic?
Yes. This podcast is more likely to give you an allergy attack than the average podcast. Distinctly more allergenic than other breeds of podcasts.
Studies have been done to prove this?
Yes, yes. Research. I feel like I should make a binders full of joke right now, but I'm not. I don't have a good one. So I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 84.
84. We're two away from jokes about getting rid of the whole thing. For those of you just joining, I feel like someday somebody new is just going to start from the most recent episode.
It could happen.
And they won't know what's happening.
It could happen.
We have a magical hat. It has its own email address. You people write into this hat's email address. It checks them, sucks them out of the email, and puts them into little tiny cards that we draw out of the hat magically. And talk about whatever you wrote about until we're sick of it.
Actually, the drawing part's fairly ordinary. The fact there's anything in there to draw out, that's the magical part.
The magical part goes from after you've sent the email and then before we draw it out.
Yeah, because
both sending an email and drawing cards out of a hat randomly are not that magical.
No,
it's
not
the
magical
stuff in between.
In between.
Very magical.
Yeah.
The hat does not talk, however. Anyway, that's the whole bit for the show. So, welcome. It's almost as fun as it sounds.
In a way, though, even though we are slaves to the hat, we kind of are controlled by the people that are submitting questions.
Yes, yes.
In a way.
Yes.
I mean, the hat determines which things we answer in which show, but
the important point is that neither of us have any actual personal agency in our lives at all.
That's right, especially in the show.
Yes.
I mean, I suppose we decide when we, how long we talk about something. Like, you know, we might draw a question, talk about it for 2 minutes and move on, and we might draw a question and talk for a really long time. But I have a feeling the hat knows exactly what's going to happen before we even decide.
You think the hat is omniscient?
Yeah, I think we think we're choosing these things, but we're not really.
I assume, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's been 2 weeks since... For us, it's been 2 weeks.
Yes.
For y'all, it's been 1 week, so...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because last Thursday, I was watching Nosferatu.
Yes.
With the Alloy Orchestra.
So how was the movie? Would you recommend the film?
The film? Well, it's a classic.
Does it have anybody in it we'd know?
Probably not. I liked it a lot. It was fun to watch it in a theater, a 100-year-old theater, with orchestral accompaniment and everything. It was very nice. What I thought was interesting... was that Metropolis? I saw that performance too with the Alloy Orchestra at the Englert, as most of you know, and it was better.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but Metropolis is better as a film than Nosferatu is. And so I got the impression that the Alloy Orchestra, although they create these amazing scores for these films, and I recommend anyone to go to one of their performances if they're going to be in your town. I think they write a better score. You know, the best scores they write are for the best films.
I feel like, not having fully seen either of them, my knowledge of the two films, I do feel like there is more opportunity for musical creation in interesting ways in Metropolis.
Okay, see
than
that,
in Nosferatu.
Okay, that's exactly right. But the thing is, if you think about it, as composers, they do have an opportunity, you know, to look at this film, Nosferatu, and say, okay, this film isn't as good as Metropolis, but maybe there's something we can do to the score. Because the score is so important to the viewing experience. I mean, a lot of people totally underestimate the value of sound and soundtrack and things like that.
And especially in a silent film, of course.
In a cinematic experience. So actually, if they wanted to focus on it a little bit more, put a little bit more work into it, they could actually make the experience, they could make up for the shortcomings in the film and make the experience just as good as with Metropolis. But what they do is exactly what you're saying. The film's quality basically, well, as you can imagine, you know, when you're creating a score, you create themes, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when a character comes on, you play the same theme. Well, there's a lot of repetition in Nosferatu that's visually a little bit boring and annoying. And to couple that with musical accompaniment that says, well, here's this theme and we're going to play the same theme again with this, visual stimuli or whatever, it makes the score seem kind of monotonous. Whereas they could notice that perhaps while they're scoring it and realize, you know what, by changing the score so that it's not as monotonous as the film, we might actually make the film experience less monotonous.
Yes. Yeah.
But I got the impression that the composers for Alloy don't take it quite that far, and they just score it according to what they see, and it's still great.
Yeah.
It's still amazing, but they have an opportunity to make the experience of, say, Nosferatu every bit as good as Metropolis, but they kind of let the quality of the film determine the quality of the score.
Yeah. Which sort of makes it, essentially, you're talking about they draw the inspiration for the composition from the film, therefore, less quality film, less inspiring, less score.
That's right.
Or, to get a little postmodern, and I'm sure I'm putting words in their mouths, you could also look at it as the score is their opportunity to subtly critique the film.
Well, you know, that's actually an interesting point, but yeah, exactly.
Because just in that thing, I'm like, by having repetitive themes, you could be pointing out this movie has repetitive themes.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ezzy, you have to get off my leg because your claws are so huge and it hurts.
But it was overall a great experience. I mean, going to see a film like Metropolis or Nosferatu in a theater that's 100 years old and it's restored, you know, and then you have this orchestration. It's just a few guys doing it. It's not like a full orchestra would be, but somehow you still get that mystique or that feeling like you've been transported back in time and you're watching this film like when it was released, you know, and you're experiencing it like the people experienced it who first watched it. I think Nosferatu is an excellent film. Like I said, it's not as good as Metropolis, but especially as vampire stories go, it's one of the best. You know, it's supposed to be based on Bram Stoker's Dracula, but the director couldn't get the rights for it, so
yeah.
He tweaked a few things. And actually, I think it's a better story than Bram Stoker's story.
And it has all sorts of spooky legends associated with the filming.
Well, actually, just the other night we watched Shadow of the Vampire.
Shadow of the Vampire, which is a fictitious making of sort of thing. But there are weird legends and superstitions around the actual filming of that and around that character.
Well, I'm not really aware of all those stories. I just know they made that Shadow of the Vampire.
Basically, the only stuff that is pretty solid about it is that the actor who played the vampire was unknown prior to this, was unknown after this, and only filmed at night.
Well, of course, in Shadow of the Vampire, they add a few other things like since he's sort of a method actor, he's going to be in makeup all the time. This is always who he's going to be. You're never going to see him without his makeup.
Well, yes. And Shadow of the Vampire doesn't really leave things ambiguous.
No, no, no.
Shadow of the Vampire really wants you to understand why he is the way he is. But this is supposed the actual legends that came off of the filming of this.
Shadow of the Vampire, by the way, is a very good film.
I thought it was quite good, yes.
I recommend anyone to see it, especially after seeing, you know, watch them to, at one after the next, and it's pretty cool. Eddie Izzard's in there as the...
And I feel a little bit, it's very weird, but I really got it from that film, and Malkovich is also in there. Past a certain age, I sort of will watch anything Willem Dafoe is in now.
I know.
After a certain age, he basically doesn't make poor choices. John Carter, possibly notwithstanding. He's sort of the anti-Jeremy Irons in that way, I feel. Mm-hmm. Like, he went the other direction.
Maybe. We also saw in the last couple weeks, we saw Snow White and the Huntsman.
Really?
Yes, we did.
Okay, first of all, why?
Because...
I mean, because I did sort of rip the shit out of it on the
yes,
show.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, there were other people in the household interested in seeing it.
Okay.
Scenes with Snow White dressed in armor that made sense.
Yes, real armor, yes.
Yeah. It was kind of inspiring to the women in the house. It's like, well, and they're also fans of...
I would agree if it wasn't Kristen Bell who was in the armor.
Stewart, you mean, right?
Kristen Stewart, sorry. I'm not a big fan of Kristen Bell either, but no, Kristen Stewart is the real one.
Also, both women in the house are fans of Charlize Theron,
yeah.
Right?
And to be fair, she was the best thing about that film.
So we watched it.
And?
It was not nearly as bad as I expected it to be.
No,
my expectations were so low.
It's pretty entertaining, but largely not to do with the quality of the film.
No.
It's sort of entertainingly poor.
It wasn't, and it also wasn't as offensive from a feminist standpoint as I expected it was going to be.
No, I think it was much more offensive from a sentient life form perspective. It wasn't super sexist, but it was super dumb.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Yeah. But no, it was not, especially for a Snow White story.
Well,
which can be a lot worse.
And there were even things that I read differently than I think a lot of other people did. And when I watched the film, for example, when the huntsman kisses her, that didn't seem romantic at all. It seemed, you know, paternal. It seemed to me like... And the one kiss that she gave...
Well, they're making a sequel, so we can see how it ends up.
Well, she's not in it, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
It says the sequel is he's going to be in it.
Huntsman and other people.
Huntsman and something else. Her story's done.
Thank goodness.
Well, partly because she had an affair with the director and we can't...
Yeah. Anymore.
So, but no, it wasn't horrible. You know, there were some things that were bothersome about it on various levels. And of course, like you said, it wasn't the greatest story in the world, but...
I do think it shows a little guts how they ended up handling the character of the Queen. A little bit.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I don't want to spoil. I don't know that I ever spoiled this before, and I don't want to spoil it now.
Well, you told the entire story
film. But when they get into her motivations and why she is the way she is, I thought, interesting way to take it. It's a little bit... it's a little bit doing a vaguely heavy-handed pseudo-feminist thing, which actually makes the feminist point look worse, sort of, you know, but, yeah. but I still thought they were stretching at least a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was okay. Let's see what else. I think that's pretty much it for consuming media.
For you, that was pretty busy.
Which is the only thing worth talking
about
my life. So,
yeah,
I mean on the air anyway. And what about you?
I had a lot of stuff, I think.
You think?
Let me see. Well, there's a lot of things, not all of which is consuming media.
Oh, okay.
I did see two films. A week ago, I saw Sleepwalk With Me. which I think I've talked about on here before. Comedian Mike Birbiglia did a stand-up routine for years and then turned it into sort of a one-man comedy show and then eventually turned it into a screenplay that Ira Glass from This American Life produced.
Oh.
And it's very, very autobiographical. It essentially is entirely. Minor changes are done for the sake of making it make sense as a movie, but it's pretty much what happened to him. And I liked it pretty well. It's thought-provoking. It's a very good movie about stand-up comedy, which I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy, like, the craft of comedy, and so it's a movie about that. It, in certain reviews, is doing very well on, like, the festival circuit and stuff. Certain reviews are knocking it for being something of another one of those stories of a man-child growing up sort of things.
Yeah.
Which he acknowledges, but says, but that's what happened.
Right,
like,
right.
I really was a man-child growing up. Like, I don't mean to be derivative, but my life happened to be derivative.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it a lot, and I like him. It has some other comedians in it, some of them sort of playing themselves, some of them just playing other parts. It was good. It didn't blow me away. Like, if you never see it, it's fine. But I thought it was good, and I liked it. And it's pretty funny. And then last night, we saw Seven Psychopaths.
Have you seen the trailers online where they replace the characters with the cats?
I have not.
It's pretty funny. Anyway, so how was it?
Well, my answer is very complicated. I can't say what the producer thought, but I can quote her.
Okay.
And she's quoted when we left the theater as saying, "I liked it."
Oh.
There we go.
fairly straightforward, but...
Going into it, I knew... apparently the producer did not. I hadn't realized. This is the same writer-director who did In Bruges. That we both very much loved.
Oh, okay.
Hilarious movie. Terribly violent, filthy comedy, but wonderful. Hilarious, hilarious film. About basically criminals from Britain who things go bad and their boss sends them away to hide out for a while, and they hide out in this city in Belgium called Bruges, and it's really boring.
Yeah, I think you did tell me about that.
And Colin Farrell's the main character, and he plays a complete idiot, and he does it really well. It's the only time I've ever liked him in something. He does it a really good job.
Maybe he was typecast.
And in this is the same guy, and Colin Farrell's the main character in this one, too. It is also fairly filthy. It is also fairly violent. It is also very funny. It is a very different film. The analogy I've been using, and I really think it's kind of apt, and I'm not... Keep in mind, I'm talking about relationship of the two films, not quality compared to my analogy. It is adaptation to In Bruges being John Malkovich.
That's pretty complex. Really.
I know. But you take being John Malkovich,
man,
which was thought-provoking and crazy and very funny and a very good movie.
Okay.
Very entertaining.
I mean, I barely remember it, actually. But I'll take
and then you take Adaptation, which...
Another one I barely remember.
Also funny, also very crazy, but had a major message going on and stuff and got very meta. This is very meta in the same way. They're both weird, but this one starts doing... It's about a guy writing a film, and we get the film within the film stuff going on and all that kind of thing. And we get very meta where we talk about the situation as though it were a film, and of course it is a film, and all that kind of stuff. Christopher Walken steals the movie.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And it's beautiful because he's Christopher Walken, but they're also really casting for the fact that he is old now, and they do it. It's a beautiful part of him as an old guy that is still very Christopher Walken. Like, nobody else could have done this part. Sam Rockwell just eats the scenery. He gets to play this incredibly crazy character throughout and just runs with it. It's gorgeous. Tom Waits is in it, and I know this sounds silly and a little redundant, but Tom Waits is an incredibly ugly man. And I never knew this, because he's always, like, shaggy and often sort of bearded and has glasses and stuff. In this, he is completely clean-shaven. His hair is back. He has no glasses. He's very clean-cut. That man does not look right. That is a mutant-looking guy. It is freaky.
Maybe we're related.
It's a very... Yeah, it's still a very violent movie. I mean, it's not for kids at all. There's a lot of... movies are doing this more. It's freaking me out. People getting shot in the head and the camera doesn't leave the shot. Like, a lot of violent movies do this nowadays. It used to be back in the day, if somebody got shot in the head, the camera would cut just as, like, the bullet went off or whatever.
Okay.
Not so much anymore in a lot of movies, and this is one of them. And that freaks me out, both because when I see it, I'm like, I don't think that's really what it would look like. But on the other hand, I really don't want to see what it would actually look like.
Right, right,
Woody Harrelson is in it as the primary antagonist, and he does a really good job. It's very good, but it's very... I'm still processing how... It's very ambitious as a film.
Hmm.
It's trying to do a lot of stuff. How well it succeeds, I'm not 100% yet. But yeah, I would recommend it, given, you know, if you understand what I'm saying about what kind of movie it is and you think that sounds fine, I would definitely recommend it. If you're my parents, yeah, don't go see it. Also, I have a new favorite terrible television show.
Oh.
Not to say that Once Upon a Time is not still awesomely terrible, although it has gotten bad enough Trish has given up. I'm on my own with Once Upon a Time, though.
I think I'm about to give up, too.
We've got Mulan now. Come on. It's getting so ridiculous. No, it's amazing.
That's just...
Oh, God, it's so bad. I love it. But there's one that's better now.
Okay.
Ghetto Batman. That's what I call it. Arrow.
Oh, Arrow.
Arrow. I don't even understand. Like, from scene to scene sometimes, I don't even understand how we got there.
Mm.
It's just an amazing action-packed train wreck from hell.
Mm.
And I'm just loving it. And it's not even a little bit good. But it's cracking my ass up. This is the thing. There are bad TV shows, and most of them are bad, and I don't watch them because it's boring when it's bad. Every once in a while, you're bad and it's not dull, and that's when I'm entertained. And Arrow is not at all dull, but it is not at all good. And it's totally Ghetto Batman. Like, so much of it is trying to be Batman, but just with no style, with no ability.
Well, arguably.
With bows and arrows.
Arguably, Green Arrow, I mean, was a character that DC created, which is essentially a Batman clone.
Yes, yes, yes. But it really shows up here because it's very much like the cinematic versions of Batman done poorly. So I'm loving that. The producer says Revolution... Well, the producer said Revolution was getting better. The producer now says Revolution may be getting shitty again. But she's still watching it. She's taking that one for the team. What else? What else? There were a couple other quick things. Roller Derby tomorrow night, last game of the season.
Okay.
I'm taking two newbies to it. I'm very excited. People who live in the area, you should go. Doors open at 6:45. Ballot starts at 7:30. This is at the Coralville Marriott. Go. It is awesome. So that's tomorrow night, so I'll tell you about that next time. Haven't played Dresden Files since we last spoke.
Oh, really?
The game had to get canceled this week. Somebody had a last-minute family emergency thing.
Oh, no.
So we haven't, yeah, we haven't played since then. And the producer and I think I mentioned before I got promoted and we had our annual merit raises and stuff. So we redid the budget and there was a little wiggle room now. So after this weekend, which this weekend is when the producer runs her 5K on Sunday, she's going to do it. People finally doing a 5K for reals. She registered for it today.
Wow.
Her sister's coming down for the weekend. We're going to cheer her on. It's going to be awesome. After that, it is too cold for us to be exercising outside. We are joining a gym.
Really?
We're actually joining a gym.
Huh.
I'm going to start freaking waking up at 5:30 going to the gym. instead of waking up at 6 and walking around the block outside.
That sounds like quite a commitment.
Kind of excited about it. Kind of also questioning my life, because this is the American dream at this point. Like, we worked and scrimped and saved, and finally we're making some money so we can afford to pay someone to let us go there and make an effort and wear ourselves out. Like, this is against what I stand for, and this is my reward.
Oh, you mean against what you sit for?
Yes, what I... Exactly! Exactly! This is against what I sit for and what my ancestors sat for.
Your ancestors?
My ancestors, a lot
of sitting.
I don't
think your ancestors have anything to do with it.
I come from a long line of lazy bastards.
You think so?
I hope so.
I doubt it.
But anyway, yeah, and so the fact that, like, this is my reward is that I get to join a gym and work out there. And the fact that it kind of is, and I'm kind of excited, I'm like, wow, something has gone weird in my brain. But there we are. It's the same.
Well, priorities shift as the number of years go up.
Yeah. And that simple thing, now that the years have gone up, I don't want to die any earlier than I have to.
Well, and neither do I want you to die any earlier than you have to. So I'm
glad. Like sometimes you do.
No, never.
A little bit.
No,
sometimes.
No. I would like you to be around for good.
For many, many episodes is how you're supposed to put it.
Let's just say I'm older than you, so you shouldn't go before I do.
Okay.
That should not happen.
Oh, believe me, I don't want to go before you do.
Good.
But that's a low bar because I've made some calls.
Anyhow, can I ask you a question?
Probably.
Or was there something really important you needed to talk about?
No, I think that was my whole time.
Since you know, we watched Nosferatu and Shadow of the Vampire and all this stuff, I was curious. You were talking about how you weren't into werewolf stories because it's always packs and stuff like that.
I'm not into the whole canine thing.
Right. But you do like vampire stories.
Quite a bit. I'm a little burnt out now, but yes, historically, I've been very much into vampire mythos.
Oh, now why is that, do you think?
I
mean, you can explain why you're not into the wolf, lupine, canine thing, but what attracts you to the vampire thing?
There's a much more of a tragic romance feel there. And I gotta say, that's the vampire I'm into. I'm not into the bestial one. I'm not into the Bram Stoker one. I'm into the romantic one, the handsome dark stranger one, the one from the movie Bram Stoker's Dracula, which I find amazing because it bears no resemblance to the book. Years later, when I read the book, I'm like, wow, these are
no. You're right. The Bram Stoker one is, like you said, it's he's a monster. There's no two ways about it.
And that's the thing. It's funny. I think I like the story of the movie better.
Yeah,
because that's the kind of vampire I like—the tragic love
story.
Well,
and that's why—that's why, was it Scorsese who made that film, or
Coppola?
Coppola, yes. That's why Coppola made it that way.
I was sitting here. I was like, Scorsese, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I'm like, oh, it was Coppola. That's kind of like Scorsese.
No, but Coppola. That's the reason he made it that way, was, you know, because he knew that audiences would...
That had become a thing since sort of the '90s and stuff. And that's I like. Tied into that are issues of taboo, issues of sex, issues of romance, issues of death, issues of isolation, things like this. There's a lot of metaphor tied into vampires. I feel less of that with werewolves in general, and most of what those are issues of animism, issues of rage, and issues of various canine traits.
Well, also
pack traits.
Also, there's
like that.
Kind of a Jekyll and Hyde kind of stuff.
Yes.
Good and evil inside you. Very simple, straightforward, not very complex.
Those metaphors don't appeal to me.
No, because they're too stark and very simplistic.
And it's just not my style. I mean, and especially nowadays, people have shown that you can totally get lots of sex metaphor out of werewolves also. Not my kind of sex metaphor.
Well, yeah,
metaphor.
But thing is, you're interested in ethical and moral ambiguity in your stories a lot, and there aren't very many werewolf stories that have
No.
But a lot of the vampire being stories human, do.
Just about the only one that sort of did deal with that.
And it didn't even do it very well.
No, it did not.
But it's kind of built into a vampire story if you're going to try to make the vampire sympathetic in any way.
Yeah.
Which Bram Stoker didn't do, and neither did Nosferatu didn't do that either.
No, because in that case, the vampire is the other in a very... There's no subjectivity with the vampire. No. The vampire is a force of nature, essentially.
Right. In fact, it's very very tight, closely tied to the original myths of the vampire,
yes.
Which there were two things you need to... Basically, vampires... of medieval period were the zombies of our day.
Yeah.
Which
is exactly the thing. Nobody gets into the subjectivity of the zombie. I mean, occasionally somebody does to be avant-garde, but it's not really a thing. That's not why zombies are there.
And even the blood-sucking aspect of a vampire was... Nobody really thinks about... You know, nobody thinks of a zombie that doesn't eat people. That's what a zombie does. And for a vampire to suck blood, I mean, that... It's not like they're two separate things. It's what they are.
Yes, and it's an issue of struggling with humanity and struggling with emotion and things like that. Whereas the werewolf frequently is all about trying to chain in your inner rage and your anger and stuff. And that's never been me, and that's never been something I'm that into.
Yeah,
it's just not my vibe.
I just find it interesting that, you know, the whole... I mean, as you know, I've written about vampires and werewolves myself, but I've never been into either one of them very much.
Yeah.
I put them into my stories.
Well, vampires and werewolves look fairly different.
Oh, very different, right.
Your werewolves are familiar.
Yeah. no pun intended.
They do take on that... shamanistic thing that has become more of a modern thing, and I totally can see that being a vibe you could work in really well.
Yeah.
Your vampires are weird.
Well, for one thing, they're not dead.
They're not dead, and they're
which is a huge difference. I mean, and actually, it might not qualify them as vampires.
I sometimes question the consistency of your vampires in the series. But I think the argument is that that's an intentional writing style, because it's not blatant inconsistency. It's you only get to know this much, and then the inconsistency may be with assumptions that I made.
Well, and also, and then later, also different characters in the story tell different stories.
Yes,
and the point is, you as the reader are supposed to decide for yourself who the more credible person is. I don't really go out of my way to make something definite and
certain. Yes. Although I do think it's fun, because that actually becomes even more self-referential with your vampires, because some of them talk about how vampires can't really agree on where they came from what they are.
That's right.
And I'm like, that's brilliant. I love that.
That's right.
But yeah, at this point, I'm in the sort of postmodern era. First of all, vampires and werewolves are starting to look a lot alike,
which kind of goes full circle to where they started.
I mean, and
vampires were originally revenants who were dead werewolves.
Yeah. And they're all looking very boring to me now.
Well, you know,
because now they're essentially just the goth kids I remember from high school.
Also, the metaphors are getting a little tired.
Yes.
For what vampires
and I feel like you can do it better now. So yeah. And yeah, at this point, werewolves and vampires just have too much baggage with them.
You know what we did after we watched Nosferatu? Maybe it was the next night. Netflix had streaming just about all of the Universal Pictures monster movies, with the exception of Frankenstein.
Oh yeah, because they just made their deal again.
Yeah,
so
we watched...
I should look through Netflix again, because they made that deal.
We watched Dracula with Bela Lugosi. We watched The Mummy. We watched... which also has...
Do you have Phantom? Was Phantom in there?
Phantom of the Opera.
The original Phantom of the Opera?
Which is a great film.
With the actual arms holding torches?
The Mummy, who also has... what's his name from Frankenstein?
Karloff?
Yeah, Boris Karloff is in that. And Wolfman with Lon Chaney. which was actually pretty good. You didn't like it?
I really don't like old time werewolf movies. They seem even more so than the other monsters. Something about old time black and white film werewolf just seems so stupid to me. I don't know
and what
it is.
What I didn't realize is the guy that plays Van Helsing in Dracula,
yeah,
also plays. I forget the scientist's name in Frankenstein, but and a similar role in The Mummy. All these scientists who are like, oh, you shouldn't do this, you know, the cautionary scientist. The same guy plays all three of those people.
And what you don't know is it's the same character wandering around. How did I dent my computer? When the hell did that happen?
I think his last name's Von Sloan or something. I thought it was pretty cool.
He just wanders around telling everybody, don't fuck with monsters, and nobody listens.
I also realized that...
Look at that. It's a dent in my computer.
Yeah, you did put a dent in it. I also realized that I really like even Bram Stoker's version of Van Helsing. I think that's a great character.
Van Helsing is interesting.
It's too bad that... I mean, I seem to remember in the movie, you know, the...
Van Helsing?
No, the Coppola movie, that Anthony Hopkins, is he? Could
yes.
He play that? That I liked his portrayal of Van Helsing, but you don't really get to see very good portrayals of Van Helsing. I mean, he was okay in Bela Lugosi's Dracula, but the whole film's sort of cheesy, so...
It's not a story about him, and there's a complexity to his character that nobody ever... explores, because the people that try make him into something else, like the Van Helsing movie,
which was so bad.
Oh yeah,
so terrible.
Kind of entertainingly bad for me. I remember being like, "Really,
no,
really?"
I didn't like
through
it
the whole
at all.
Thing,
it was just terrible.
It was definitely bad though.
But it's a great character, and I liked how this character sort of recurred in these three films in a way. It was pretty neat.
It's like how Christopher Lee is in everything. All right. Well, that's our time. Good night, everybody.
Sorry.
No, but we are at over 36 minutes now. So now's the time where we draw some shit out of the hat that you wrote and we talk about it. Y'all should write the hat. Everybody should write the hat. Especially people who have never written the hat before. Write the hat with a question or a topic or something like that. Write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Once again, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Operators are standing by. Also, want to give a little shout out to Mark McKibben, Hard Hat number one. Put what is now our fourth review up on iTunes.
Oh, wow.
Yep. He said, sometimes funny, sometimes serious, always strange, I believe. Which...
Well...
I love it.
We'll take
it. I think
it.
That's a great way to put it.
We'll take it.
So everybody should go to iTunes and put in a review. Make me happy. Also, here's a question we were discussing earlier today over email that I want to sort of crowdsource here. I'm thinking, I think about why do certain people not write in or why do people not write in too often. And the two things that occur to me, the one is you write into the hat. Weeks go by and your question has not been read, and you think clearly they didn't like it that well, or you think I just wrote one, I shouldn't write another one. I can't express this to you enough. Whatever your other beliefs on how our show works, we really do randomly draw from all of them out of the hat.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible that a question that got put in there before we aired our first episode is still in there.
Yeah,
we randomly draw it, which means we don't judge the questions prior to drawing them out.
Yeah,
I judge the crap out of them once I've drawn them out. But that's going to happen regardless of your question. And also, it means that you can't really have too much unless you do so many that, like, more than anybody else, because they're going to get random. It's not like we're going to read them all at once or whatever.
Right.
So send in questions. The other thing I worry, because we've had it happen now, people worry about not necessarily knowing or remembering what we already talked about, and therefore they don't want to duplicate when they write in. And so I was thinking about actually writing up the questions and who asked them at the end of my little blurb on the blog. The blog at themagicaltalkinghat.com. Y'all should go there. Have a little talk. It's fun. Try it. I was thinking about, so like at the end of my little blurb, I would list the questions and I would actually word for word write the question and what the sign name was. And that could be interesting, and that would be an easy way for people to keep track of what's been said and for people to know, oh, their question is coming up or whatever. But would it be too spoilery? This is the question. So you people, tell us. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, on this episode. Tell us if you like that idea or not, or if you don't give a damn. Even if you don't give a damn, tell us. Go there and tell us, because I want a sense from our little hatlings and haberdashers and hard hats out there of whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, because this is how our show works.
Yeah.
We do what you want us to do unless we don't feel like it. I feel like I should run a big company, and that should be my mission statement or whatever. We do what the customer wants us to do unless we don't feel like it.
And we rarely feel like
it. Very seldom. All right, so write the hat and tell us what you think about this brilliant new idea. Okay? Do it now. We'll wait.
Do you think they did it?
Probably.
Okay, good.
They're good people.
So, boy, we've been doing this a lot lately, not pulling something until after 40 minutes. I wonder if people are getting...
We got to keep up. The problem is when we miss an episode, we always have more stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe that's why they're not writing. They're like, they got plenty of questions. We don't have that many, I don't think. I don't know, but still.
Anon asks, how green are you? And by green, meaning eco-minded.
Oh.
Well, for me personally,
I feel like you're very green.
Well, I'm one of those people that, you know, I'll go to a site and go through the quiz to find out what my carbon footprint is, you know, and one of the reasons I became a vegetarian was because of environmental concerns with, you know, how much land it takes to raise animals for food rather than grain. We recycle a lot in the house, and we like to buy our food as local as we can. There are a lot of reasons for that. You've heard me talk about them here.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Political reasons and economic reasons, but also environmental reasons. When I vote in elections, I'm voting Green Party more often than others, and that's not just for ecological reasons, but there are a lot of things about the Green Party I don't agree with, but I do find that my political views seem to revolve around this notion of sustainability a lot, certainly political and economic sustainability, but also environmental sustainability, which the Green Party addresses all of those things and a few things they shouldn't address, which is where I disagree with them. But I don't think I probably, you know, I'm not one of those people who, you know, if you lived in my house, you know, you might notice these few things I do, but you might notice a few things I don't do. For example, I probably don't recycle near as much as I could. We should probably compost more of our stuff and grow more of our food, like in our backyard, rather than putting it through the garbage disposal. I mean, there's a lot of things, but I suppose you could say I'm still fairly eco-minded because I know what those things are that I'm doing wrong. And I probably won't continue to do them wrong over time as I'm getting more concerned about being, you know, living a sustainable life. So I suppose on the spectrum of eco-minded people, well, as far as eco-minded, not taking into account behavior, I'm probably about as eco-minded as you can get. But my behavior probably isn't where I would think it should be to be someone who's doing everything he can to make his carbon footprint as absolutely small as possible. So... yeah, I'd say I'm fairly green.
See,
in regard to all that.
And I would say my answer is essentially the real world version of your answer, exactly.
What does that mean?
I mean, a really green-minded person that you have in mind is so far out there in their greenness that they probably have a reality show about it. Whereas a person, a really far out there green person in my mind, is pretty much where you are. And so the relationship of this eco god out there to you is probably about the relationship of you to me.
Well, you know.
And we recycle. We don't recycle real well. A lot of it, though, isn't that we throw it away. It's that it's just still living in our house. We have a lot of cardboard. We have a lot of old bottles and things that we just haven't gotten rid of. So we're going to recycle eventually. We recycle. We don't recycle as much as we should, probably. We compost pretty well. We compost a lot of stuff. The producer and the neighbors do a garden every year, and we get a lot of our produce out of that.
See, that's good. That's really good.
You know, I tend to vote, and I tend to make my purchases with the environment in mind. But yeah, I'm pretty much your standard, you know, middle-class white liberal that doesn't do nearly as much as I would like to or I feel I should.
Well, you know, one of these days, it may be that I actually live, if we can make this work, in one of these houses that, you know, it recycles its own water, gray water system, and all this stuff, a zero impact house. That would be.
We call that a still suit.
Shut up.
You're going to live inside a still suit.
No, that would be awesome to live in a house like that.
And have blue within blue eyes. See, I'm way more interested in the political ramifications. I'm way more interested in social and government policy that is helpful to the environment than I am about my personal footprint.
Well, I'm interested not only in my personal footprint, but I'm interested in how we can create pathways for other people to reduce their footprint in whatever way they feel comfortable doing. You know, I would like to, you know, live off the grid and have everything be sustainable and all of that. And I suppose, like you would say, I would be at the extreme side of the spectrum. But now I know the path. If I know the pathway to the extreme side of the spectrum where I feel comfortable living, I know where all the paths are to other parts of the spectrum where other people might feel comfortable living. You know what I'm saying? So if someone wants to say, I want to go all the way, I can say, well, this is how you do it. And if someone wants to say, well, I want to live in a big, expensive house, but I do want to do some things to, you know, reduce my footprint, I can say, well, this is how you do that. You follow what I'm saying?
Can you stand how cute we are right now?
Well, okay, first of all...
I know, she's pissed off, but she's still cute. Sorry, Ezzy and I were posing... while he was talking.
Is that what you were doing?
Yes.
I see.
She was not as into it.
No, but she really wasn't.
I get that a lot from women.
So yeah, I'm interested in all of that, because to me, public policy doesn't really mean anything unless someone's going to do something.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
And it's all going to come down to what we are all willing to do.
See, and for a little while, I tried to get really cynical about it because I don't have any children, and I feel like, as a species, we're in some trouble. I'm fairly cynical about the human race. And so for a while, I was like, you know what? I don't even have to worry about it, because it's not like I got any kids that I'm leaving it to anyway. But unfortunately, I have a lot of nieces and nephews and friends' children that I actually like. And so then I'm like, oh, damn it. So I was all ready to just let the word old burn.
So you don't care about the human race in a general sense?
Well, I used to.
Because I do. I mean,
I used to, but the problem is I don't know how long I believe it's going to be around anymore.
Well, that's not even the point. I mean, yeah, I have.
Well, I have at nieces that point, and you get into a question of futility.
Well, yeah, but so what? I have young children, relatives too, but that's irrelevant. I mean, even if I didn't, I'd still care about where the human race is going to go, and it doesn't matter how futile it seems. You know, you don't give up.
I give up all the time.
You go, you know, you got to go down swinging.
I give up all the time. Constantly.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, I guess I don't know if it's how I was brought up or whatever. It doesn't matter if it looks like it's like, you know, when I was playing sports in high school, we could be behind, you know, there's only 2 minutes left in the game. We're behind by 20 points, but you still play like there's a chance you could win because that's just what you do. You just play through to the end.
Whereas I don't even join the team because I don't think I'm going to win.
Well, and it's not really
I have no work ethic. I'm very lazy and fairly misanthropic. Or at least I'm an aspiring misanthrope.
Okay, well. I don't mean to suggest that it's about being competitive. It's about It's about just going the distance. You know, it's about, you know, when it's done that you did 100%, you put in 100%, it doesn't matter whether you're going to win or lose.
I understand the concept. Absolutely. I lack it.
Really? Do you think that's true?
I do.
You lack it.
I do. I lack that principle. I lack that desire. I lack that goal.
But why? Because because it seems to me that that's the whole fun in living, is you go out and you totally commit to something clear to the end, even the bitter end, and the thing that makes it worth it, even if you lose, is that you had this great experience of totally committing and throwing your whole self into something. So when it doesn't turn out the way you wanted it, it barely even matters, because you had that experience of completely being committed to something and growing as a person, I guess you could say. But
I tend to sort of go the opposite direction in that don't take it too seriously.
Well, it's not about taking it seriously. It's just about you set out to do something and you do it, and you stick with it till the end. And
that's still a level of seriousness that's ahead of me. I'm like, you do it, and you try and have fun with it, but it's not an issue of effort. It's not an issue of how hard you try.
Well, I don't
have perspective.
I don't think about it as how hard you try either. I think of it more as either you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. And you can still show up. You can still be standing on the court and not really be doing it, is what I'm saying.
Well, there's a lot of space in between those two things.
It's not so much an issue of effort. It's more an issue of, my perspective is, if you want to do it, there are certain things you will do. If you don't want to do it, but you have to be there anyway, there are certain things you won't do. And just showing up is not the same as doing it.
Okay. I feel like we've really strayed from the original point.
I don't know.
So just showing up is being born a human in this case?
No, no, no.
Then what am I doing?
I don't know.
I also think we're getting very close to the same thing where you don't understand stuff and it's because people are stupid. I freely admit I'm probably very stupid.
You're not stupid.
I very well could be.
I don't think people in general are stupid. I think...
I know, and that's why you constantly get confused.
There's something else going on. It's not stupidity. I don't know what it is.
See?
Maybe it's a little bit of insanity.
Well, okay. Then I'm insane.
Well,
I can go with that.
We're probably all a little insane. I mean, I know I am. But, okay, whatever. I've kind of lost track of what we were talking about, too. So I guess we should just draw something else.
You're also talking too quiet again.
Sorry.
At the mic. Listeners, I think I've depressed William.
No, I'm not.
So you should cheer him up by going to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell him good things about people who aren't me.
No, I just felt like I must have misunderstood what you said, and I feel bad about that. I didn't mean to misunderstand you.
It's how I live. Nobody understands me. I'm a complicated man.
That's not what you were just saying.
No one understands me but my woman. I'm the black dick that gets all the chicks. Is Isaac Hayes dead?
Yes.
That's a recent thing, though.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anyway, next question is from Blood Sparrow. What is an XKCD that sticks out in your mind the most? Just for catching everyone up, in case not all of our listeners are familiar with XKCD, go to the website xkcd.com. It is a webcomic. It is awesome.
I've seen some of these, but I don't remember any of them.
Have you seen the recent one where he did the bit about the world being really big?
No.
Oh, it was amazing. He made it... He was making a point about the size of the world and life and stuff. And basically, you clicked and dragged. It was a one-panel thing. You clicked and dragged on it, and it went on forever. And he had drawn things into it. And people literally spent hours, and you couldn't get to the borders of it. There was just so many things. It was amazing. He's really creative. He's very, very geeky. He's very, very smart. Sometimes his comics get a little too geeky, and only if you like studied that particular kind of physics in college would you find it funny. Sometimes they get a little specific emotional to him. Now he's married and has a kid, I believe, but there was a time where you could really tell if he broke up with somebody recently, because his comics sort of took on that tone. But in general, they're just good, geeky, humorous things that point out a lot of interesting stuff. Ones that always stick with me, ones that I put up in the workplace, my classic one is two guys being... two guys walking around, and one's giving a tour of a computer programming place to this other guy. And he says, and over here is the final step in our coding. Just to ensure that nobody can copy our code, we actually have a Navajo code talker who translates all the code into Navajo. And you see the guy over there talking into a microphone, into a box, and he says, Aleni, Doleni, Doleni, Aleni, Aleni, Doleni, Aleni. Excuse me. And finally, the guy says, isn't he just saying the Navajo words for zero and one? And the guy's like, whoa, whoa, keep your voice down. You don't want to spoil the secret for everybody. I love that one. There was also a great one about the guy's hobby was trying to convince people who give the touring test that they're actually a machine. That was a fun one. There was an interesting one about passwords and how we create these complicated passwords that's like some word that you spell with like numbers and things to make it weird. Mm-hmm. And then they broke down like how many bits were involved and how complicated it would be for a computer program to crack, and then how difficult it is for you to remember. And then they switched to one that was correct horse battery staple all together. And they counted up the bits, and it was way harder for the computer to crack. And they're like, difficulty in memorizing it? You already have. And sure enough, there's a picture of a guy thinking about it, and there's a horse saying, there's a picture of a battery with a little staple sticking out of it, and the horse goes, that's a battery staple! And you go, correct! It's very easy to remember. By the fact that I remember it now.
Pretty much already forgot.
Correct horse battery staple.
Okay.
Much easier to remember than troubadour, but one of the O's is a zero, and then the R is the number four, and, you know, it gets weird. Like, you know, people like to get these weird creative sort of, and this letter's capital, but this one isn't, that kind of thing.
Right.
So I thought that was cute. I had that one up at work for a while. I love to throw ones at work. I work with a lot of academics, including a lot of people who do math, including a lot of women who work on math. And there was this great classic one that's a chalkboard, and this guy's working at the chalkboard, and the guy's watching him, and he says, wow, you're bad at math. And then you cut to a different one, and it's the same situation, except it's a woman at the chalkboard, and the person watching says, wow, girls are bad at math. I always loved the irony of that one. And I always have found that so weird, because I get that that's a stereotype. I don't really understand how it started, because I know statistically past a certain age, and as higher education goes along, fewer women tend to stay in math, statistically speaking. Mm-hmm. My entire experience from elementary school up through freshman year of college, which is when I took my last math course, I took Calc 2, was that by and large, there were not only were there many very good female math students. I would say the bulk of the best of them were always female.
Hmm.
And so I've always found the concept that women are worse at math not only obviously insulting and terribly prejudicial, but I just don't even conceptualize it because I'm like, that's the exact opposite of my lifetime experience.
Yeah, I have to agree. My experience, all the math classes I ever took were well attended by female students who all did very well. The only math class I took in college was taught by a woman, teaching assistant. So, yeah, I think I was almost halfway through college before I even realized there was such a prejudice about women, mm-hmm. Mathematicians and engineers, because it wasn't my experience at all. And that was back in the late 80s, early 90s.
And statistically, there is less presence of women, especially in higher education and you know, careers in math and science.
Yes, but...
there's a lot of lurking variables that affect that. Yes,
exactly,
that.
That's right.
And it has nothing to do with actual ability.
No, no.
But yeah, no, he does comics like that. I would encourage you all, if you haven't ever, go to xkcd.com and check it out. It's some good stuff there.
Sorry, I don't remember any. I've seen some that I really liked. And when I was on Facebook, I even like shared them and stuff, but I don't remember them. I don't have a good memory for things like that.
And then gives up. No, wait, it doesn't work because you didn't even try.
Didn't even try.
We need a separate song for that. Ezzy, you have anything to say? Because we're about done. No. Ezzy has to go to the vet.
Why is that?
I think it's time for her. It's her scheduled time to get something, some sort of shot. I don't know if it's rabies vaccine or I don't know what, but it's time for her.
I see.
You also should check out that I was showing William earlier. Go to YouTube and look up Maru, M-A-R-U. And there are like 237 videos over the last 4 years of this adorable cat and its antics.
Very strange.
I should put links to both of those in the show notes. I will try to do that. You got anything else exciting to say?
No.
All right. We hope you've enjoyed this broadcast. If you have, tell us about it on the blog, themagicaldockinghat.com. If you haven't, tell us about it on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Also, like the hat on Facebook, because the hat likes being liked on Facebook. Also, write the hat. It eats your emails to live, maybe. I don't know. But do it anyway, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Even you, the one who has never written before, write in. Even you, the one who wrote last week, write again. Everybody. By the way, Azure Talon does still listen. Does not intend to stop listening. I got confirmation from him. So, Azure Talon, I would just like to say to you personally, fuck you, and tell Kim we said hi.
And thank you, Blood Sparrow and Anon, for your
yes.
comments.
And questions, that is. Follow me on Twitter, @NotQuiteTony. I'm hilarious and awesome.
Wait, it's just Not Quite Tony, right? Not the hilarious and awesome part.
No, yeah, that's a very long handle. My Twitter handle is @NotQuiteTony. I'm hilarious and awesome. No, that would be tricky.
Okay.
That's like my new catchphrase. I've decided I was going to have a new catchphrase at the end of everything I say. I'm going to end with, ha ha! No, seriously, I'm very fat. Give me a pizza. It didn't really, I haven't been sticking to it, though. I need to do that more.
But you don't stick to things. You already pointed
that's
that out.
True.
I feel bad about how our conversation went south there in the middle of the thing.
I feel bad that you feel bad.
I also wonder about our last podcast and talking about the one and stuff, if that was another one of those.
I don't know. We got some interesting response. I felt that was very, ow!
You yanked on her leg. It's your fault.
Well, she, you always take your fiance's side.
Well.
No, I felt very good about that conversation.
Well, I did too,
intense, but I liked it.
But, you know, the thing is, when I express opinions like that, I alienate people all the time. It's why I don't have very many friends.
It's what makes us a comedy podcast.
It's why I think I'm going to lose you as a friend one of these days, because we have conversations just like the one we just had, and it's like, William, you're a dork, and then, you know, you don't want to hang out with me anymore.
Well,
because that happens to me all the time.
First of all, last week, we agreed, pretty much.
Right, but
second of all,
it's just a matter of time.
It's not your opinion that had me look at you weird, and it's not your disagreement with my opinion. You get this other times too. It's your persistent inability to either understand or at least to deal with my opinion. You seem to either be unable or unwilling to accept my view on that, because you kept saying no, but it's like, and then I would say, no, but it's like this, and I'm like, it's okay to just say, wow, that's different, and maybe I don't even understand it. That's well, okay to say.
Well, I know it is, but how can I say that if I haven't even felt like I've tried to understand it completely? You see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like what you were saying was either trying to argue that, in fact, our opinions are the same and we're just not phrasing them right, or just to argue that my opinion wasn't the
right
one.
No. Actually, it wasn't about your opinion at all. It was about, you know, for example, you cast something like as a, in terms of effort, and I didn't feel like my opinion, to me, it wasn't about effort. So I was really trying to clarify my opinion, not cast yours in any particular way. That's where the whole thing broke down, was I wasn't understanding at all what you were saying. I thought you were critiquing what I was saying and not understanding it, but actually the opposite was happening.
But the other, I guess there's an important third thing here. And no matter how weird the conversation gets between us, we're still going to be friends.
Well, I hope that's like, true. I mean,
if we stop being friends, it's way more because, like, you killed my family or something.
But I would never
do
that.
That's my point.
Oh.
It's not going to be because our conversation got a little tense and weird. Dude, we have gotten way more fucked up conversations than this. They weren't on the air. They were years ago. You once threatened to walk out of a restaurant if I didn't stop talking about what we were talking about.
Yeah, I was upset about that.
And I understand that. But, I mean, we've had nothing on this podcast is a patch on conversations we've had, and that's fine. Our friendship lasted through that.
Okay.
It's going to be fine. Like, it's going to take something actually... This is not significant. Something actually significant would have to screw that up.
Well, let's just hope
hope
that nothing significant ever happens.
That's what I'm saying is your opinions don't matter to me, and therefore I can't find them threatening.
Okay, good.
All right. We're way over time now.
That's what it should be.
But on that lovely sort of touchy-feely moment... I've started listening to a podcast called You Made It Weird, and so I find this really funny. That's it. So we're going to come back next week.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have a bunch of new questions then and 1,000 more listeners. So everybody go out and get 172 more listeners each.
Each.
Yes. That should almost get us to 1,000.
Yeah. Very almost. Close.
All right. Have a good night, people. You want to take Ezzy home with you, really?
No.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.